You're listening to a Day1.fm show.
Pick My Brain is the podcast where founders pitch me their startup and I try to give them some useful advice so they can connect better with potential co-founders, investors, media, and of course, customers. My name's Alan Jones and I was a founder myself for about 15 years, and after that an angel investor for another 15 years, so yeah, old. Some of my ventures have been successful and some failed disastrously, but I like to think I've learned a thing or two along the way, and maybe some of that can help you. So if you'd like to learn how to tweak your pitch, subscribe to the Pick My Brain show now, wherever you like to listen to podcasts.
Hi, it's Chris Titley here, and today we're joined by Mark Calabro, co-founder of Hungry Hungry. Mark, thanks so much for being a part of this series.
Yeah, really excited to be here, Chris.
Mark, let's talk a little bit about Hungry Hungry at the outset. What is the business and how did it begin going back to the early days?
Yeah, I could describe it in so many ways, but as it is today, it really is continued to be a digital ordering platform in the food and beverage industry, or hospitality industry, as we like to call it. And it really is a not just a B2B platform, but it's also very customer centric. So for what that translates to is we take a very customer centric view on the world, which in turn is, did you hear that with the dog?
Oh, that's okay. It makes it a bit more authentic, Mark, if you want to keep going, mate. I don't mind a bit of dog barking. We've got some dogs here in the office here as well. So I'm sure the listeners out there will appreciate the intricacies of animals in offices or homes, etc.
Yep. So, really, it's, again, digital ordering platform, F&B industry, and it's evolving much more than that.
Excellent, mate. And so going back to the history in terms of the timing of when you'd launched, people think about food and bev during the tough time and hospitality over the last couple of years, but maybe you want to go back to the beginning and then we'll get through how you navigated that unprecedented period.
Yeah. And I think probably for most of your audience, you know, we associate that tough period as COVID for hospitality, but hospitality had been going through a lot more headwinds even before that, which we had. So prior to Hungry Hungry launching in early 2019, my partner and I, we'd spent 18 years building Automate, which was a point of sale platform in the hospitality industry. So we'd seen the 2000s there, the GFC, and then after post GFC, it was more around just managing costs and the rising wage costs that was challenging the industry towards profitability, and that kind of led us into, this is just before Uber, having a bit of a play around whilst we're inside Automate. Still, we kind of had our own startup inside of a business, so we did something which is kind of cool in reflection, is that we really tried to disrupt our own business with a new platform. Mm. And that's how Hungry Hunger was essentially born. It was putting the order in the hands of the consumers and away from the actual staff in the business.
Gotcha. And when I think of hospitality and tech and fintech, et cetera, there's so many different things that go through my brain, from ordering to inventory to cash flow to POS to all these sort of different other things. Where do you fit in specifically? And you've been a sort of a veteran of the hospitality industry for a while now. I mean, what sort of, you know, trends have you seen in the past where you now go, well, this is our business, this is our core business, and we're doing really well at it?
Yeah, probably just the important piece to add to that is the point of sale platform, or POS, is really central to technology in these hospitality businesses. So what I mean by that is, you know, reservations plug into POS. The anything that went digitized or online would inevitably end up back in the POS. The first one off the ranks was really, you know, your accounting platform, so you're not double handling invoices with suppliers. Yep. For example, reservations quickly became another one. So yeah, POS was kind of, you know, front and center of that innovation. And there's been some great efficiencies to be had on the back of that, albeit in an industry that, you know, we've often discussed and is widely known as being one of the last to be disrupted with tech, which in itself is, you know, presented some challenges along the way. And then we kind of land into COVID, which,
from a macro point of view, just completely, unprecedented is the word that was used, and I still use it.
And now we've got another set of challenges ahead. However, these are just different challenges, but I think it sort of becomes, survival of the fittest in many ways. And that talks about not just the hospitality industry, but I think, you know, for the suppliers, including the technology partners around the industry as well.
And Mark, when I think of fintech and hospitality, and fintech broadly in terms of a social good in regards to trying to get people to be more efficient, to get, you know, payments quicker, to get suppliers paid, to get, you know, anything to do with payments to allow that sort of flow without any, you know, major interruption. I'd imagine there's competitors that angle and touch every point of different things in hospitality. Is Hungry Hungry more of a sort of a one-stop shop, or are you sort of really focusing on one particular niche vertical within hospitality?
Yeah, and a lot of these different, let's say, segments of or parts of that supply network to hospitality, a lot of them are starting to converge. Well, they have already started to really kind of converge. We've seen that already with some consolidation around the POS guys, who we're still, you know, closely attached with in many ways. So what we're seeing now is, I think we'll see a new wave of innovation. And the way that we see that innovation is really about how do we see what the consumers want? How do we see what is the future of dining in 5 and 10 years from now? It's an interesting one because, you know, we were 18 years B2B, so we were always kind of on that business supplier side. And then when we first went out with Hungry Hungry in 2019, we took a very kind of consumer-centric lens on it. And then we kind of played in between that for the 2 years of COVID. And where we see that, you know, is an interesting piece, and where that innovation will drive the next wave is really around the consumer. And that's a very wider conversation. And we think it's actually a really cool one, especially now with the introduction of AI and ChatGPT. And, you know, I've actually got a webinar tomorrow night, 2 a.m. in America, which is part of my EO Global network that I'm part of. And anything kind of AI and ChatGPT is, we think, super cool.
Yeah, no, that's a new-ish trend, broadly speaking, come to mainstream by ChatGPT, but sort of AI has always been prominent through things like Siri and whatnot and other, you know, consumer-facing applications. I'm interested to know what use cases that would be in hospitality, from your thinking. And on that question around the future of dining, I mean, you know, most people in Australia now are fairly familiar with ordering on their phones, ordering at the table using a QR code, etc. But, you know, is this a trend where it sort of caps out at a point where maybe at a budgetary point of view you don't do that and you don't get a fine dining experience, etc.? And how do you break down those segments of where you think the consumer might be at?
Yeah, and there's a bit that kind of sits on top of all of that, and that is, you know, here in Australia, and let's just talk about Australia and NZ, you know, you've got 30-odd million people, and sometimes we tend to forget that, you know, we're not, because, you know, we live in either Melbourne or Sydney or Brisbane, that the rest of the broader market behaves and makes their purchasing decisions like we do in the big cities. So a lot of these considerations are that, you know, I think everyone thought when we were in COVID that we were going to click our fingers and the world would change forever and everyone would now be using their device to order or pay or make a buying decision. That hasn't happened. And we took a view earlier on in that, and that, you know, this was going to be, you know, a marathon, not a sprint. And when we're looking to, you know, implement or introduce certain technologies, they're not just going to instantly become the norm or the way of doing things. So I think to your question, there's also some considerations there. And I think a lot of venue operators are still trying to get their head around how, now that we're actually implementing technology on the floor, very different to ordering at home, your Uber Eats, DoorDashes, how does that actually fit in? Because again, it's not a one size fits all. And to be specific, you know, you go into a cafe Saturday morning, it's super busy. There's an efficiency there on many levels for the cafe as well as the consumer, as opposed to Thursday night, you're going on a date, you're not sure, you know, about the wine, and you won't have the sommelier over there to come
have
and
a chat. Yeah.
So there's a lot, so many use cases that I mean, I could speak for hours just on that point alone.
Yep. No, I just think that there is, I mean, pubs, broadly speaking, have adapted QR codes and it's sort of casual, as you might describe it. But then, you know, hatted restaurants or whatever it might be may not have the online ordering and the sit down and have a nice date over a QR code, for instance. So there is, you know, the dynamics have changed, but you never know, right? So just back on that AI thing. What, you know, some of the use or ideas that you may think of in terms of application use within hospitality? I'm keen to hear some, and you may not have any, but certainly, the crazier the better.
Yeah. Well, my business partner and I have known each other for 20 years, and we're extremely different, and I think this kind of exists in most kind of networks of friends and families where, you know, I only want to kind of know, you know, the 6 or 8 items on the menu that I'm most likely to order. I'd rather spend 30 seconds or less in front of a menu, whereas he's happy to sit there for, you know, 10, 15 minutes just looking over.
Is that why the banquets are so popular, you reckon?
Yeah. Many have said so. I think just, you know, if you look at that kind of convenience factor, and, you know, we often talk about, you know, enhancing the customer experience, and you know, these are just words that kind of just get thrown around willy-nilly, sort of thing. And you know, an experience that's the magic and what we love about hospitality, that everyone has kind of like their own definition of what an experience should look like when they go out to eat or drink. It's a very personal thing. So, and that presents a challenge. But linking it back to kind of the, you know, the world in front of us now with AI and some of these, you know, emerging technologies, it's not a one size fits all, but if we can allow consumers to be able to, match what they're thinking, how they're feeling, it's a very emotive thing. And we spend a lot of time talking about that. Because I think that, you know, in the absence of, you know, going full robotic, and, you know, we started seeing that 6-7 years ago in some countries, and they were quite gimmicky. We've seen actually just in the last year some robots walking around the restaurant bringing out food, and it's certainly eye-catching. But I think some of these things are quite novel. But how do they play out in a world where, you know, while we as humans still love to go out, and there's still something quite uniquely human and social, going out to eat and drink?
No, I agree. I think, you know, having dinner with someone, you know, family, friends, etc. It's you know, broadly speaking, you know, very strong. Even at home, even like, you know, it's very strong on a mental health point of view. There's lots of benefits of that. You know, I'm just thinking out loud, like from a chef's point of view, maybe you've got a whole lot of ingredients, but you don't know what to whip up. So, you know, a couple of clicks of the button, you're like, oh, that's, I didn't think of that. Bang, there's a dish that's new on the menu with seasonal ingredients, for instance. Your personalization to you would be interesting. Like, it's, you know, it's a Tuesday night, I feel like salmon, but it's a Friday night, I feel like a pizza. You know,
that's a great one. I might pinch that one for me, Chris. I mean, just to stretch that one little bit further, you know, it's a Thursday night and the chef's been there for, you know, only, you know, 2 weeks, and he's not quite sure about what the crowd is on a Thursday night, you can kind of plug in, I've got excess salmon and whatever else, and it's a Thursday night, and then it just quickly spits out, cool, this is what I'd be making given this is our audience on a Thursday night. This is most likely to, this dish or this dish is most likely to sell most tonight, tomorrow.
Using the data and maybe, you know, overlay that with the people that have, you know, two beers that are ready to eat, and you're like, well, that's data says that after two beers, people are eating, or whatever it might be. I'm just thinking out loud here. But
I mean, this is the cool stuff about it. It's boundless.
Yep. Hey, Mark, we could talk for hours about this, and I wish I could. Just finally, I suppose, looking forward to the future with Hungry and hospitality and fintech, broadly speaking. You know, I'd love to know your views. Are you an optimist? Are you cautiously optimistic? And we've got, you know, as we haven't really discussed, but the macro overlay with double-digit interest rate rises in a row, plus some fear about what's happening in the banking system. So there's a lot of negatives out there, but are you cautiously optimistic?
Yeah, that's a really good way to put it. I've got, you know, investors, I've got friends who play in the investment banking sector. It's an interesting time at the moment. I think fundamentally, you know, a good business is a good business. Just because we were put in like a 10 times, 20 times, 30 times multiple of a business, you know, a year ago, that same business today that's, you know, especially if it's break even, you know, if you still put a, let's say now you put like a 4 to 6 times multiple on it, I think, you know, it represents that there's still some great opportunities out there in great businesses backed by founders who are navigating this period of time in a kind of a, you know, fiscally responsible way.
Capital efficient is the buzzword, yes.
Yes, definitely. So, yeah, look, very optimistic. It's I think it's times like these that some of the...
Listen to the Unfunded podcast brought to you by the Day One Network and hosted by me, tech writer Joan Westenberg. We're sharing the no-holds-barred untold stories from entrepreneurs who have decided to build a business on their terms. I'll be interviewing successful founders and operators on the grit and ingenuity it takes to build and scale independent startups without the support of traditional venture capital funding. Subscribe to the Unfunded podcast now, wherever you get your podcasts.